On August 20th, 2026, the founder of China Evergrande, once the country's biggest property developer, was sentenced to life in prison. Here's the strange part. This company, found to have inflated its revenue by 78% in 2020, kept buying land from local governments, borrowing from banks, and selling apartments before they were built. So how is that possible? And if all the blame lands on Evergrande, does that settle a $300 billion bubble? Hello, and welcome to Sekihan. Today we trace how Evergrande grew and set it beside a bubble Japan knows well from the 1980s. On August 20th, 2026, the Intermediate People's Court of Shenzhen in southern China sentenced Hui Keyan, founder of China Evergrande Group, to life in prison. Evergrande was founded in Guangzhou in the 1990s and became one of China's largest property developers in the 2010s. Hui was for a time among the country's richest people. The court also ordered lifetime loss of political rights and confiscation of all his personal property, and sentenced 56 executives and associates to prison terms from 18 years down to 1 year and 10 months. What it found was sustained, large-scale accounting fraud between 2016 and 2021, assets inflated, liabilities hidden. Evergrande defaulted in substance in 2021. It could no longer pay its debts, with liabilities reported at roughly $300 billion. How a company like that got so big is not something the verdict explains. Three questions for today. First, how could a company that inflated its revenue by 78% keep buying land, borrowing from banks, and selling homes? Second, is this the same circuit as Japan's bubble of the 1980s, and if so, where does it differ? Third, the verdict convicted Hui and 56 others, the company and its people. If all the responsibility lands on Evergrande, is the bubble settled? Or does the system that let it grow still need an audit? Let's start with how Evergrande grew, and how it stopped. Evergrande was founded in Guangzhou in 1996 and listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange in 2009. According to China's securities regulator, in 2019 and 2020, the company overstated its revenue by about 564 billion yuan, roughly $80 billion over 2 years. In August 2020, regulators introduced the three red lines, three financial tests. A developer that failed them could not grow its borrowing. By late 2021, Evergrande missed payments on its dollar bonds, money borrowed from overseas investors, and defaulted in substance. Hui was reported placed under compulsory measures in September 2023, and in January 2024, a Hong Kong court ordered the company liquidated wound up, with its remaining assets distributed to creditors. And on August 20, 2026, the Shenzhen court handed down the life sentence, 30 years from founding to verdict. What exactly was punished? According to the regulator's penalty decision, Evergrande's mainland development arm, Hengda Real Estate, overstated revenue by 50% in 2019, and by 78% in 2020. Nearly four-fifths of reported revenue was not real. On the strength of those false figures, it issued bonds worth 20.8 billion yuan. The eight counts include fundraising fraud, fraudulent issuance of securities, corporate bribery, and misappropriation of company assets. The group was fined 8.82 billion yuan and Hengda 7 billion. Note what the court convicted. Not high leverage, not aggressive growth, raising money on falsified books. That distinction matters later. This story often gets the label China's Lehman moment. But what failed was a property developer, not a bank like Lehman Brothers. Lehman's losses traveled through financial markets in an instant. Evergrande's seep outward, slowly and widely, into banks, construction firms, local governments, and the people who bought its apartments. Its liabilities stood at 2.44 trillion yuan at the end of 2022. Who carries that loss is the question for the second half. One loop built Evergrande. It starts with the local government, which sells land use rights. In China, land stays state-owned, and what is sold is a long lease. Behind that is a 1994 tax reform that pushed most tax revenue to Beijing while leaving spending with local authorities. Local governments were left with thin tax bases, but they keep the full proceeds from selling land. Land finance became the system. Next, a developer borrows from a bank to buy that land. Then it sells the apartments before they are finished. This is pre-sale. Buyers pay most of the price up front, and mortgage repayment starts before they get the keys. If the developer stops, the buyer has paid and has no home. Buyers carry a large risk first. The developer takes that advance money and buys the next parcel of land. As long as housing prices keep rising, the wheel keeps turning. Evergrande turned it faster than anyone else. How much did local finance depend on land? In 2023, local government fund revenue, a budget separate from ordinary taxes, came to 6.63 trillion yuan. 5.66 trillion of that, about 85%, came from selling land use rights. Within that budget, selling land simply was the local finance system. For a local government, rising land prices were not a market condition. They were the premise of its budget. Why did buyers keep buying? According to a People's Bank of China survey of urban households in 2019, housing made up 59% of household assets. Financial assets, deposits, stocks were 20%. Homeownership stood at 96%, with 1.5 homes per household on average. With money unable to move easily into stocks or abroad, rising housing was the most accessible form of saving. And with no nationwide annual property tax, holding an empty second or third apartment cost almost nothing each year. Line up the players. For the local government, land sales were the budget. For the developer, advance payments bought the next parcel, and the company grew. For the bank, it was lending to a borrower holding an asset that kept rising. For the buyer, housing was the most accessible savings, lightly taxed. While prices rose, selling, lending, and buying each looked rational from where you stood, and the risk of the whole became hard to see. Fraud and bribery are not part of that rational, but the circuit is. That is the China-specific machinery. Now let's check whether the same upper-level mechanism, rising prices creating credit, ran in Japan in the late 1980s. By credit, we mean money that moves on the promise of future repayment or delivery. Bank loans, pre-sale payments. When asset prices rise, it gets easier to borrow and raise more of it. In Japan's bubble, when land prices rose, collateral values rose, banks could lend more, that money bought land and shares, and prices rose again. The Finance Ministry's official history records that total bank lending grew 11% a year from fiscal 1983 to 89. Lending to real estate grew 18% a year, and lending to non-bank lenders, 21%. Money was flowing into land. Two turning points arrived together. The Bank of Japan raised its benchmark rate, the official discount rate, from 2.5 to 6% between May 1989 and August 1990, making borrowing costlier to cool the economy. And on March 27, 1990, the Finance Ministry capped growth in real estate lending at the growth of total lending, the so-called volume controls. The Nikkei peaked at 38,915 on December 29, 1989. Land prices began falling in 1992. Bad loan losses at Japanese banks are estimated at roughly 100 trillion yen, the entrance to the long stagnation of the 90s. What the two share is the mechanism. Rising prices create credit, and new credit pushes prices higher. The institutions are not the same. In Japan, the core was lending secured on rising land. In China, it is advance payments on unfinished homes. Who turned the wheel differs too. In Japan, mainly banks and companies. In China, four parties: local governments, developers, banks, and buyers. The trigger in Japan was rate hikes from the central bank, plus lending curbs from the finance ministry, two separate actors. In China, the three red lines, issued jointly by the central bank and the housing ministry. And where the damage shows: in Japan, bank collateral and corporate balance sheets. In China, those plus pre-sale buyers and local government finances. We come back to that in the analysis. Now, how did Japan react? This is a scapegoat put on display, plain and simple. The local government officials are probably nearly all in the clear. That is a Japanese investment commentator on X, and it was the most shared reaction. The news. On August 20th, 2026, Evergrande founder Hui Kaiyan was sentenced to life in prison with all his assets confiscated, and 56 others were convicted. Japanese reactions split into two moods. One found the severity striking, often by contrast with how accounting scandals are punished in Japan. The other read the verdict as scapegoating and asked who else was in the circuit. The second was shared more. And one thing was missing. Among the most shared posts, almost nobody connected the verdict to Japan's own land bubble of the 1980s. These are posts on X, not public opinion. Here they are. The most shared Japanese reaction to the Evergrande verdict came from an investment commentator who posts as Yukimama, "Life in prison plus his whole fortune confiscated. A scapegoat put on display," she wrote. And she laid out the loop. Developers borrow enormous sums. Local governments sell land and profit from it. Banks lend. Housing prices rise, and the economy grows. And when it bursts, everyone screams for their money back. The whole country ran this model for years, and one person was made to take the fall. Notice that this is the layered circuit reading arrived at from Japan, and that it names the local officials as the ones likely to walk away. Another widely shared post converted the scale into Japanese terms. An account that charts corporate earnings posted Evergrande's results, a loss of 10 trillion yen in 2021, that is 10 times over the nuclear power loss that nearly sank Toshiba. That is how Japanese readers measured it, not against the 1980s, but against the biggest corporate loss in their own recent memory. The other Japanese mood was about the severity itself. An investment education account wrote, "So the founder of Evergrande, the Chinese developer that made headlines a few years ago for cooking its books, gets life in prison." Maybe Japan should start saying that too. If you cook the books and cause this much damage, you get life. Japan's own corporate accounting scandals have typically ended in fines and suspended sentences, so the contrast landed. But here is the gap we noticed. The comparisons Japanese users reached for were Toshiba and Japan's own penalties, not the land bubble Japan lived through in the 1980s. The structural comparison is a thin spot in the Japanese conversation, and it is exactly what the next chapter takes up. China Evergrande's founder, Hui Kaiyan, has been sentenced to life in prison and 56 others convicted. Yet this company, found to have inflated its revenue by 78% in 2020, kept raising money. Why didn't it stop? At least part of the answer. The money of local governments selling land, banks lending, and buyers paying in advance was all linked by one assumption, that housing prices keep rising. That mechanism, rising prices creating credit, also ran in Japan in the 1980s. What each party knew about the fraud, and when, the public record does not say. What the court convicted was fraud and bribery, raising money on falsified books. The rotation model itself, advance payments recycled into the next parcel, was not Evergrande's invention. It was the industry standard. Evergrande turned the wheel fastest. It was not the only company turning it. How far land finance, bank lending, and pre-sale have been audited is a separate task. Pinning the responsibility on Evergrande alone and building a system that does not produce the next Evergrande are two different things. What the Evergrande verdict announcement cannot tell us. Start with the bribe recipients. Corporate bribery is among the counts, so there were people on the receiving end, but the announcement gives neither names nor number. A separate, unpublished investigation cannot be ruled out. It just cannot be confirmed. The local governments that sold the land and issued the permits, what they knew and when, is not in the announcement. The banks that lent, the same. What can be said is that while prices rose, no one in the circuit gained anything by questioning the assumption. The failure of outside checks is on the record. In the regulator's 2024 penalty against PwC China, about 88% of the audit working papers did not match the work actually done, and some properties recorded as handed over were bare ground when inspectors visited. To be fair to the other side, punishment did not stop at one man. 56 people, two companies, and the auditor were penalized, and the authorities have moved on borrowing limits and delivery of unfinished homes. So it is not that nothing was done. The question is whether the review reached the public side, land finance and loan approval, and whether it was enough. There is a real argument that the three red lines killed Evergrande. The 2020 rules capped borrowing growth using three tests, including liabilities to assets of 70% or lower, excluding advance receipts. A company refinancing its way forward had its funding cut off at the entrance. The same argument is familiar in Japan, where lending curbs and rate hikes are still widely described as what broke the bubble. After the curbs, growth in real estate lending fell from 15.3% to 0.3% in a year. But the authorities have their own strongest case. The fraud sits in the 2019 and 2020 accounts before the three red lines existed. The crisis cannot be explained by regulation alone. Regulation exposed a fragility that had already built up. Japan's research points the same way. The rate hikes were monetary policy against an overheating economy. The lending curbs were administrative guidance against land prices. Different actors, different purposes, and what has mostly been debated is timing, not whether tightening should have happened at all. Regulation may have pulled the timing of exposure forward, but stopping earlier leaves a smaller pile of unfinished homes in debt. In both countries, the policy turn was the trigger. The powder was the circuit that assumed rising prices. So where does the damage show? In Japan, the first things hit were bank collateral and corporate balance sheets. China has that channel too. Plus two more. First, the presale buyer. The money is paid, the mortgage is being repaid, and the home is not built. The authorities ran a campaign to secure delivery. Xinhua reported 3.38 million units delivered in 2024, and the IMF recommends central government spending worth 0.9% of GDP to clear unfinished pre-sold housing. Second, household wealth and local finance. Where housing is 6/10 of household assets, falling prices squeeze spending with unusual force. And local land revenue has roughly halved from its peak. The wheel that local finance ran on has slowed hard. The IMF judges that the prolonged property adjustment and the weight of debt are producing weak domestic demand and deflationary pressure. How far local finances slowed in one number. Land sale revenue peaked at 8.7 trillion yuan in 2021 and came to 4.2 trillion in 2025, roughly half. The land-dependent model has hit a wall. The demographic tailwind is gone too. Residential investment fell from 12% of GDP in 2020 to 6% in 2025. The population has fallen 4 years running, and births in 2025 were 7.92 million, the lowest since 1949. China has tools Japan did not have in the 90s for suppressing an acute crisis. State-owned banks are large, capital movement is controlled, and the center can intervene in local governments. Bank runs and chains of failures are easier to suppress. The same ending as Japan's is not guaranteed. Since 2024, a swap has been converting 10 trillion yuan of hidden local debt, borrowing local governments kept off the books into local government bonds over 5 years. But the capacity to suppress a crisis is also the capacity to postpone losses rather than recognize them. The IMF warns that continued broad financial support keeps unviable developers alive and delays the market exit that needs to happen. Reschedule the debt for 10 years and you avoid bankruptcies. And for 10 years, that money funds nothing new. Evergrande's losses do not disappear. Buyers, creditors, the investors and suppliers it owes, banks, local governments, or the state will carry them. On the mainland, delivering unfinished homes comes first. The fines and confiscated assets go to the treasury. Offshore creditors are widely expected to rank behind. Preventing a financial crisis and absorbing the cost over years as low growth instead, that may be what a Chinese version of the lost decades looks like. Back to the three questions. First, how could a company inflating revenue by 78% keep raising money? Because the money of local governments, banks, and buyers was linked by the assumption of rising prices, a loop that was hard for anyone inside to stop. That is at least part of the answer. Second, is it the same as Japan? The mechanism, rising prices creating credit, credit pushing prices, is similar. The players and the places where the damage shows differ. In China, pre-sale buyers and local finance take hits that Japan's banks and companies absorbed. Third, if the blame lands on Evergrande alone, is the bubble settled? The court punished fraud, and the punishment reached 56 people and two companies. How far the audit reached the bribe recipients, the land sellers, and local finance is not visible in what has been published. neither Japan's bubble nor China's was built by one villain. On the assumption that prices would keep rising, companies, banks, governments, and buyers each acted reasonably and together built something unreasonable. Japan took more than a decade to clear its bad loans. That experience shows both how heavy and how necessary it is to audit the machine and not just the operator. Stop at Evergrande, or audit the machine that built the mountain. Whether China avoids a long stagnation will turn less on the sentence than on what happens to land finance, lending, and presale. The full analysis and more Japanese reactions are on the Seikehan blog, link in the description. If you found this useful, please like the video and subscribe. Thank you for watching.